What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
Over recent months, we've all been dealing with the reality of rising energy bills. Staying warm and well is the priority, but where possible, small changes can make a real difference to our energy bills. Switching off lights can help, but far greater energy savings can be made by turning the thermostat down by 1 degree, using the eco setting on large appliances, or turning off radiators in rooms we don't use. Government is providing supports where needed and will continue to monitor the situation in the coming weeks. For information on available supports and energy saving advice, visit gov.ie/reduce-your-use. Brought to you by the Government of Ireland.
Mentality monsters. I'm going to use the word with the orange rugby team.
Someone pressed the alarm.
Take it off, Liverpool. Let's take it off the Reds and let's attach it to the Ireland rugby team.
OTB AM. Live weekday mornings from 7:30 on the OTB Sports app.
OTB AM with Gillette Labs. Get the ultimate shave or your money back. Neon Night Edition available now.
You know, that wasn't an All-Ireland winning performance.
Probably should have won the game based on their second half performance.
Is it a step too far to say it was the performance so far of the World Cup? Maybe not.
OTBAM's performance rankings with Gillette.
I'm scratching my head. That performance was just lacked that intensity.
Woo, we should say Alan Quillen's here. Alan, good morning to you.
Morning, lads. How are you?
Very good. Celebratory mood. This is now becoming a bit of a habit. We're starting with the green, are we?
I think we should start green, shouldn't we? I mean, let's start in a bit of positivity. It's all going to be positive, let's be honest. But Johnny Sexton. So we've got Lee Halfpenny Wales, 4-2-2. Stephen Jones, 4-6-7. Owen Farrell, 5-17. Still could catch it. Johnny Wilkinson, 5-4-6 in third. Ronan O'Gara, 5-5-7. And a new target of 5-66. What a man. He denied doing a jig later on in the game after he kicked, I think, his last points of the afternoon. But it was a little bit of a jig. It was a little bit of a dance. He enjoyed himself out there. And He was really feeling it. He was singing along with all the music played over the PA system in the Aviva after the match as well. He was buzzing, Johnny Sexton. No reaction when he broke the record, I think it's fair to say. Ireland being 6-0 down probably helped matters there. He was concentrated on winning the match and winning the match only. But what a moment, what a man. Final ever Six Nations outing for Johnny Sexton. And what a servant he's been to Irish rugby and Irish sport, generally speaking. He was fantastic again at the weekend. And we will wish him well, and as he leads us towards a World Cup victory later in the year to sign off on a high.
Yeah, Quinny, I mean, it's difficult to find anything new to say about Sexton, but it's an all-time great of the game, an all-time great in Irish rugby, and still managing to be not just relevant but vital at this stage of his career. It's an incredible achievement.
It is, at his age, the effectiveness of not just his leadership but his overall play. The crossfield kick in the second half for was it Robbie Henshaw's try or Sheehan's try?
It wasn't Henshaw's because we don't. Oh, maybe it was Henshaw's because the game's still in the melting pot at that stage. It's
that
a 10-9
time,
it?
And just his overall physicality, and he was involved in a lot on Saturday in a really tough game for Ireland. But
what a scrum with a choke tackle at one point.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, and
always at the bottom of rucks where you're like, maybe you should not be in there. Just, you know.
Yeah, it's amazing, really. At his age, to be where he's at, and a lot of it is down to obviously natural talent, but you know, to have that fight and desire and keep making those sacrifices and commitments, his young family as well, and to have that kind of burning desire, given what happened at the World Cup a couple of years ago, which was so disappointing for him personally and obviously on the Irish team, it's amazing really what he's achieved, and the longevity of it is unbelievable. The system here allows the Johnny Sexton and the likes of Johnny Sexton to probably recuperate more and play less games and stuff like that. So it's a situation. But you still, as a player, you've got to keep that commitment and that drive and desire going all the time. And it's amazing. It hasn't waned in him. You know, the natural thing in sport is when you get to 34, 35, 36, people are kind of buying into that narrative that, you know, you have to that's the time to go and you have to leave and you're supposed to leave. Maybe he would have retired if Ireland had a really good World Cup and he might have been gone a year or two ago. I don't know.
I think he would have stayed to get to the Lions, but then obviously not making the Lions.
Yeah, so those couple of moments like that. And obviously that's a big one, Ger. The Lions, that was a hammer blow for him personally.
And ultimately that might be one of the things that's driving him continuously. You know, like...
Well, do you know, it's not even driving him continuously. I think that whole...
At the time anyway, to like... Will I
suppose
come back?
Internally it's driving him, yes. But I think... the rest and recuperation that whole summer, that pre-season, would give you the whole body a reboost. And obviously, as I said, the way he's been managed here, but to be that committed at that age and to be, you know, have that kind of desire to keep going is amazing, really. And he's done remarkably well. He's been a great leader. I think Jaco Pyper, between Owen Farrell and Johnny Sexton, because they're pretty similar, aren't they? In their temperament and their fight and their kind of their makeup. He had both
telling the referee what to do.
He had both of them coming at him on Saturday. Owen Farrell was worse.
Way
worse.
He's feeling his head there. And if he's feeling his head, is that because one of your lads clattered him in the head? And so that should have been a card.
Yeah, but it was continuous the whole game. Owen Farrell was a lot worse. I think, you know, they're both captains, they're both entitled to ask some questions, but for a finish it was just non-stop.
Do you see at the moment as well, like James Ryan, I think Sexton was kind of calling James Ryan over to lift the trophy with him, and Ryan was like, "No, lift it yourself." Like, gave him his moment to kind of be the captain. It was kind of Johnny Sexton's day, wasn't it? It was all about him in many regards. We were all waiting for that first opportunity at the post to kind of break the record. But the question now is where he ranks in terms of our greatest ever sporting heroes. And I think...
Well, let's wait until the end.
Well, exactly. We'll see what he's going to do. But I don't know. Did he make the Dublin Mount Rushmore? There was a bit of controversy there.
No, I don't think so.
No. It'd be interesting to see people outside of rugby who would have a good balanced view what they would think of him as you know, as a sports star. Essentially, how they would view him. I just think, to be fair, he's. You just have to put him right up there with what he's achieved and the way when you're captain of your country for a period like that and you get that success. The standout for me, and I don't want to take anything away from winning a Grand Slam, the series win in New Zealand was just, I keep going back to that. It was just phenomenal. The English team that won the World Cup in 2003, they went and won a series there, won on New Zealand soil as well in 2003. Hopefully it's a good omen for success later in the year. But
we had Matt Dawson on Thursday or Friday last week, and he was just like, yeah, you've got there's the bang of our team off this crowd. And now we haven't got into the game yet, we'll get into that in a few minutes time, but Sam Warburton in his piece, I saw Sam Warburton's piece on Saturday, must have been Friday or Saturday, I was like, this is actually a bit worrying. Everybody's like shooing us through, but the rest of the world, with the exception of the French, and we'll get to the French in a while, they are concerned about how good we are at the moment, which is unusual.
I think they're very complimentary as well, Ger, because I've said this when Dave McIntyre and myself for Virgin, we did round one, Ireland Wales or Wales Ireland, and the last game. So RTÉ did the other three in between the Irish games. So Dave and myself were on our travels. We did Scotland-Wales, England-Wales and England-France. So obviously you're in Murrayfield, you're in Cardiff and you're in Twickenham while Ireland are playing in the media rooms.
Yeah.
And you meet lots of other journalists who are very well-renowned journalists, rugby writers, ex-internationals. And it was amazing how many of them came up chatting in general, complimenting Ireland, how good they are. And it wasn't kind of being patronising. I think it was sincere, it was genuine. And that's on the back of the results, really, of going back to the series win in New Zealand. November, you know, beating South Africa, Australia, Fiji. Not in great style, to be honest. I think the South African one was impressive. But the thing you have to say here is if Ireland are in France or if they're in South Africa playing them, are they different results?
Yeah.
And that's the fine margins between the top five or six, I'd say, you know, that
We're going to get to that. Don't worry. We're concerned about what's going to our fixtures in the World Cup. We start with Romania on the 9th of September. Then we've got Tonga the week later. That's in Bordeaux and Nantes. And then we move to Stade de France for the rest of it. It's South Africa on the 23rd of September. So it's three matches in 3 weeks. And then there's a week off. And then we play Scotland in the last game, hopefully having known already what Scotland might have, what needs to happen. We will.
So there's
know.
A gap of 2 weeks, isn't there, between South Africa and Scotland?
Yeah. There's an off week, yeah.
Yeah, it's a longer period, which is, beneficial if you, after playing against South Africa, it'll be pretty
physical. You need to rest some bodies.
Physical. Yeah.
Okay, so look, in that first one in the green is Johnny Sexton.
Had to be. Another man that deserves to be in the green, I think, is Andy Farrell. I mean, when you think what he's achieved with this Irish team, and we're all kind of, I'm certainly speaking for myself, I was sad to see the end of the Joe Schmidt era. He achieved a lot with this Irish team as well, but Andy Farrell has just taken them from strength to strength. And even from a psychological point of view, everything that's been done behind the scenes with Gary Keegan and everyone else, they're just so impressive. What were they, fourth the first season Andy Farrell took over in the Six Nations, fourth the following year as well, then second with a Triple Crown, and now just to cap it off with a Grand Slam in a World Cup year is just something incredible. He's changed everything about this Irish setup. I think in previous years all these injuries would have led to bad results, a bit of scepticism, poor performances, but the Irish team just rose to every single challenge that was laid out in front of them, and Andy Farrell has to take, I think you'll agree lads, a lot of credit. Deserves to be in the green shirt.
Immense amount of credit, I think, for what he's done, and probably how he's kind of, you know, got hold of this group and put his own stamp on it. Mm. I think the other coaches have obviously contributed immensely in their own individual way. Paul O'Connell, Mike Catt. 2 years ago, I think, was a turning point for the attack for the team when Ireland played England in this fixture 2 years ago. You remember Keith Earls gets a try, the ball is overthrown to Jack Conan, he pops it back inside, Keith Earls scores a great try in the corner, Jack Conan scores another try in the second half, I think they won 32-18, and that was the day where we saw that attack come alive a little bit. Simon Easterby's done a really good job, I think, and John Fogarty, so They can all take a huge amount of credit. And you mentioned Gary Keegan, Shane. Mm. I think the mental side of this is really important as well. And getting the balance right of not just managing a team for Andy Farrell, but managing all the coaches, getting their scheduling right, when they train, the time they train. Jason Cowan, the fitness coach, who's there for a number of years. He was there under Joe as well. The players are very well conditioned. I think their speed of movement on the ground and their shape and their physicality and their ability to keep going and finish games strong has been very impressive as well. And I think they're able to absorb a bit of pressure and they don't look panicky. They don't look like a team that the heads drop. That was evident in New Zealand after the first tests. It could have been very easy to say, well, look, we just got to try and get through test two and three. They were unbelievably determined and confident that they could turn this around for the second test. They did that, and then the pressure of dealing with the inevitable. Well, we've won a test on New Zealand soil. We're going into test three in Wellington and, you know, we'll be competitive and we'll get beaten by a score or two and we'll still be heroes coming home. They didn't accept that, and they attacked that game. That first half in Wellington in the third test for me was the best Irish performance, the Irish half I'd ever seen. The three tries they scored, they were sensational, and it was 22-3 at halftime to Ireland, away from home in New Zealand like that. So I think they can be better. I think in a sense that...
This might be the bit where we talk about that, because the first half against England was poor. There was handling errors, ball was on the ground, there was knock-ons, the scrum wasn't great. And, you know, part of that is a function of the fact that in rugby, if you're Steve Borthwick, it's not that difficult for you to have a spoiling game plan and improve the stuff, as you said on commentary. I think, you know, you can work on the line speed during the week. It's the easiest thing. You can work on the physicality. And they also picked a much bigger team, a more experienced team to play in Dublin than they'd had the previous week against France, where they were like, oh, let's just, we'll throw the ball around and see what happens. And France cut them open.
Numerous times, yeah. Their defence was shocking in Twickenham.
So we should have expected England to be better, right? But also...
Well, I did, and many people did. And I put a tweet out on Saturday because I kind of woke up Saturday going, you know, just be mindful going to the game. It was more for supporters that this isn't a bit of a jolly here. It doesn't work like this.
Yeah.
It'd be great if Ireland can win by 20 points and, you know, the fields of Attenrye are belting out with 15 minutes to go. But it's unlikely that it's going to happen because if you're an English player, coach, manager, you're gathering the troops up after last week and you're probably having a big honesty chat. Maybe it's player driven. The players sit down themselves. Sometimes that happens when teams lose and they question each other's fight and desire. And you're always going to get a reaction of that energy, that aggression, that tempo. And they did that. There are actually some really good players in that English team, I just think. And I think they're going to be dangerous. It's strange.
Well,
you might not agree. When you go to the World Cup, they'll be quite dangerous. But they brought a lot of fire. And I think Ireland, uncharacteristically, made some mistakes.
So that's the one kind of bit that, I mean, Farrell, it's funny. There was a conversation Farrell and Sexton had at the end when everybody else is like joyous celebration on the field and the two lads are like chatting about some stuff it looks like that might have gone wrong or... They weren't fully in the moment of celebration at that stage. They were still working through some stuff.
They didn't cope as with that line speed and that aggression and maybe the breakdown being a little bit messy. I think early on in the game, there was a few turnovers.
A post really easily.
The ball was bounced out of a few rucks.
Why?
Because I think England were good.
Nerves. You've got to be nervous for...
I don't know if it was nerves, but it can happen any team that maybe, you know, you realise. And I played in the Munster team that was, we were quite really consistent in our performances for a period of time. And there is an odd time where you just kind of go, Jesus, why is this going a little bit awry?
Yeah.
It's down to the opposition as well because they raised their game. So of all the hype that was kind of put on Ireland and the occasion, the party atmosphere.
Fair enough. They're
it's a mixture, Ger, basically what I'm saying.
Because
Ireland being a little bit sloppy by their own admission.
That's the bit, right?
And England.
France would have brought the same pressure, if not better, and had better players and a more cohesive game plan. But still, when we were doing our
narrative for France?
Well, no, let me finish this point. Because when we were in possession, we weren't throwing it behind lads. Yeah. Whereas we were in the first half and... look, it's great that you come through that, but from our perspective, we were just a little bit off. That wasn't because of English pressure. I don't think, like, when the pass is going behind three runners, it's like everything is just a little bit off.
I agree with you entirely. I don't care what you say, Ger. It has an effect on you, that whole atmosphere and that party mode and
the occasion.
Grand Slam.
Complacency.
And all week. Not even complacency. I just think maybe a percent or two that this is going to kind of click into gear again and the surge of the crowd and us being a very good team will... And you see, you're one or two passes away from making those scores and the game being a little bit different.
Totally.
And then managing it better and the scoreline suddenly is stretching, stretched out a little bit.
Yeah.
Look at the Johnny Sexton one where he takes the quick penalty. We lost the line out up near the line as well. There was a couple there that just... But the big thing is they don't panic. The worry is, if you want to look at it a little bit negatively, is that a template now again to maybe this is the only way you can stop this Ireland team now? That's not the only way, but this is a way that if you get all this defensive stuff right and this aggressiveness and that maybe they will be unsettled. I think the other side is going to happen here is Ireland will look at this and probably think we need to manage a bit more territory. There was a bit more space in the backfield. And maybe they needed to put the ball up in the air a little bit at times. But some of the times the ball broke down then was on, when they started to attack and you felt
Ireland
are changing gears here and the balls just went loose in the ground. I think it was 17 turnovers in the game, which is pretty high.
Yeah, none of us are ever going to watch that game in great detail again because it was like not very enjoyable. But I like, it'd be really interesting to see when they sit down this week and watch it again and again and again and again. What are they seeing that they're going to take into the World Cup? Because no doubt South Africa are looking at that going... At 10-9, they're not going to get a man sent off.
You asked me what's different against France. France is a situation where everybody's nervous because we know France are so good.
Yeah, they're going to rip us
and
apart from
if we don't
their own
get everything right, and you know the crowd are kind of really know if they play their part, and then it turns into a brilliant game. So it's hard to deal with all that expectation and pressure. And I just think they were a little bit off Ireland, which hopefully they can look back and be better from. But overall, you know, I was thinking about it afterwards. It was hairy enough in that period in the second half, but are we kind of gone a bit ahead of ourselves that we think we should just kind of wallop England here? And we're kind of dissecting.
No, I don't think so. I think that we're clearly a better team much further down the line than the coaching ticket from England, who we're going to get to in a minute.
In their last 15 games, they've lost two games, one to New Zealand, one to France.
So that's why the expectation is there. Yeah.
And that's why the hype is there. And no matter what happens at the World Cup, in this period of time, right back to last year's Six Nations, they've been incredibly good. Consistently.
Yeah.
Consistently really, really good. They've had moments, of course, in a match, which all sporting teams have.
You used the word panic there. Like, Mike Catt used that word last week in the press conference. He said, if or when England reach a point of ascendancy, don't panic. And they didn't panic. And sometimes you're dragged down to the level of your opponent. Like, England go down to 14 men, all of a sudden the game is going to change. But Ireland didn't. Ireland were obviously, the performance was going to be dictated by the way in which the game was headed. And one thing, they lose a man, that's
okay.
Changes the dictation of the game.
Here's the comments coming in. Danny Mac 1 says, Grand Slam will live long in the memory, as well as Freed from Desire on repeat. Jesus. Not a lot of love for Freed from Desire. I don't know, everyone's given out about that.
I quite enjoyed it.
Like, exactly. Yeah, wind your neck in. Noel Kyle says, any concern how nervous the team were and a lot of players didn't perform? Would we have won if England had 15? So England weren't going to have 15 for the whole game because their discipline was getting stressed, and that's like one of the things.
Would you believe the sending off did not help Ireland?
Go on.
Because I think that was part of it again, that maybe it's going to happen, and that the expectation now is that Ireland really kick on in the second half. It galvanised England.
It's more
pressure.
Which
it can do as well. They still have 12, 13 guys in the front field. Okay, you have to work that a little bit harder, and there is a bit of space. And I think the crossfield kick from Johnny Sexton kind of proves that there was a bit of space in behind for it's Bundiaki's try, because the last try was Dan Sheehan, wasn't it? That crossfield kick up and under there was space there, but I think it galvanised England.
Cupra for mentor. Two words causing quite a stir, because this car stops you in your tracks, even when it's standing still. But that's what it was designed to do. Make a stunning first impression. Turn heads in your own 231 Cupra Formentor. It's ready and just waiting to be driven away today. Take the first step towards your new Formentor. Search Cupra Official.
That's a natural segue into the amber, because the red card is the amber. But the point being, what was it, a red card, in your opinion?
Well, it was a red card because the referee gave it on the day. Should it have been a red card? I felt, and I still feel, that it's hard on Freddie Stewart. If you go through all the protocols that the referee did, the one place he got it wrong, in my opinion, is he said there was no mitigation. For me, the mitigation is Hugo Keenan is, when he picks the ball and the point of contact, he's bending forward. I think I know exactly what Freddie Stewart, he's trying to get out of there, and he does make contact with his elbow into Hugo Keenan's face, which is clear cut contact to the head. It's not allowed. You're trying to protect the players in the game, all that. And Hugo Keenan goes off and his game is over.
Yeah.
So first and foremost, the safety of the player is paramount here. But we all know that it's there was no cynical act from Freddie Stewart. It's accidental.
And if this happens to Ireland, we will be pissed off about it. But it's a red card because that's what they're trying to do.
Yeah, it is a red card with the contact and all that. But I think it's a harsh red card, if that makes sense. Yeah. I'm just trying to be fair. And to be fair, Ger, I have always been pretty hard on these. There's no one can accuse me of saying that I'm blasé about the head contact and all that stuff. I'm really, really constantly, and I know without looking back at things I've said before in different incidents, I know I've been hard on this and I've been very, very strict. And I'm not saying that this is okay, that it shouldn't have been a red. I'm just saying it's a harsh red. I think it could, if it was a yellow for me, would there be a huge debate about it? I don't think so.
No.
You look at the Antonio one on Rob Herring in France. For me, that's a clear-cut red.
Yeah.
And there was no debate.
There was malice aforethought in that one. It's like, oh, I'm going to line him up, bang. And
there's serious impact in that. And I do think that Freddie Stewart is very unfortunate. It's a split-second thing because the ball goes loose in the ground. And, you know, you can do a still shot of it. The point of contact, Hugo Keenan, who, by the way, for me, was outstanding throughout the championship. And it was a pity that he had to go off. But I think it was a very unfortunate one and a harsh...
To go back to the point you were making, though, the red card didn't really help Ireland in the immediate short term. Obviously, over the course of the rest of the game, it stresses England and tires them out a bit. But what did England do differently after that? Were they just more conservative in their defence? And so...
No, they weren't, because I just think that there was a little bit more space in the backfield. So normally teams would hold three players back there. There was probably two and a half at times, and the wingers floating up and down. And because of the collisions up front, Jared, the ball isn't as quick. I don't think Ireland's breakdown was as good as we've seen them have it in the championship and in the past. So the ball is a little bit slower coming out of there at times. And then the first point of contact, England were winning a fair few of those collisions. And that makes it a little bit different to go right, to go forward. And then when they're putting this ball out the back, which continuously, no matter how many times, it'd be interesting to ask all the teams that have played Ireland how much they've analysed Ireland and seen that this is the way they play to get width.
Why can't they
stop
it?
How do we stop it?
Yeah.
It's so hard to stop it because you nearly have to have a shooter coming out of the line to get man and ball, because their accuracy and their timing of pass has been really good. So I think that was off as well. There was certainly a couple of times in that first half where one more pass and it's possibly a try, and England's wingers were coming in to shut off the ball, and they went loose at times. So that's probably the reason why Ireland weren't able to exploit it. But Ireland had 10 clean line breaks in this game. England had one. But there's two sets of stats done here. Some Six Nations, and I looked at ESPN Rugby as well. Both of those, ESPN are saying one line break for England. The Six Nations are saying none.
Right.
But Ireland had...
So the defence was incredibly strong. Ireland's defence across the game.
Yeah, well, they missed...
Bend but don't break.
They missed 15 tackles. I think three or four of them were when Anthony Watson started bouncing around the place and went through one time there in the second half. But Ireland's missed tackle count was much lower this time. I think even in the other games, they've been in the 20s in missed tackles against Italy and against Scotland, which is very high. Their discipline, Ireland's discipline, was outstanding.
Okay, we've kind of done England in red already, so why don't we do hype train here, Shane?
Yeah, we might as well. Well, this is certainly one you want to talk about, Ger, because are we going to get carried away now? I think we should. Why not? It's a long way to the World Cup. A lot can happen in the next 6 months or so until the World Cup starts in France, but why can't we go there and expect to win? We expected to win the Grand Slam, well, and we've done it. Go on. Bring your negativity to the whole thing. Go on.
Why can you not go and expect to win a World Cup where South Africa are lying in wait, where the French coach says we're exactly where we want to be, everybody's going to be scared of us, they're both on our side of the draw. Scotland, okay, we would expect to beat Scotland in France, even on a neutral field. We would still expect to beat them. And so you're still looking at a quarter-final where there is going to be a damaged team who comes through the South Africa game and the Scotland game, and then it's France and New Zealand. And I'd prefer New Zealand at this stage because they'll be away from home. we'd have a majority in that crowd, you would expect, in a quarterfinal if we make it there. And I just don't think you can expect to beat New Zealand. You can be hopeful that, again, on a neutral field, we'll be able to use the experience that we have against them. But there's a lot to happen in New Zealand.
The team have to expect to win. The team can't go into the match.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that, like, if we get beaten in a quarterfinal by New Zealand or France, that doesn't mean that the team is suddenly choked the way previous teams in World Cups have choked.
Mm.
We absolutely choked in Japan, and against Argentina, there's mitigation in terms of the injuries and the suspensions that we suffered. But at the same time, you know,
the expectation in sport is intriguing for me. So in other words, a team expect to win, and it's a recent kind of a phenomenon, isn't it? I never really heard that much when I was playing, not out of a player doing an interview in any sport, in GA, in soccer, and rugby, and an individual athlete, Rory McIlroy going to win an Open. I expect to go out this weekend and win. But we do hear it a lot now from sports people, and it's not being disrespectful or being cocky. It's really a mindset of what we expect from ourselves. And then you break that back down and say, well, if our forwards perform, if our kicking game is good, if we defend well, there's lots of ifs that go with that. Mm. I met Keane Healy in 2018 after Ireland had beaten New Zealand. Was it November? It was the second or third time that Ireland beat New Zealand. Maybe it was 21. I don't know what year I have. But I remember meeting him after Ireland beat New Zealand, and he was upstairs in the Aviva, and I met him along the corridor. He was going doing one of these post-match functions that some of the players have to do. And I ended up, I had to interview him, and I ended up chatting to him just kind of before we went on in front of the crowd. And I said, well, how do you feel? And are you happy? And you're not really elated, I was kind of alluding to. And he said, well, yeah, we expected to win. And I was like a little bit taken back. And then when I chatted to him more and kind of started putting some thought on that myself, it wasn't actually being disrespectful. Because if you don't expect to win, you have to find that expectation in the match, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So actually expecting to win and expecting to perform is actually a good thing. It can ignite you and it can make you really stimulated. And it doesn't, you don't have to find that extra surge with 20 minutes to go and go, Jesus, we might win this. Do you know, we might win this. Sometimes that can create a desperation if you're not expecting to win. So it's getting that balance right of it not being cocky and being over complacent.
But I agree with you. Like, Jerry, you don't expect to win every game in a World Cup, but like, England lost 36-0 to South Africa in 2007 in the pool stages and still made the World Cup final.
Yeah, but they were a shite England team.
Yeah,
they played
exactly.
Terrible rugby and that, like, they scrummed and kicked their way to the final. So that's a bad role model.
But you can have a bad game in a World Cup and still go far, go deep.
You can't in the quarters, though, is
but
the
just,
point.
No, just of course.
On the World Cup, a lot of teams will be a lot better and they'll get their timing right. And
well, like
I think
South
England
Africa are looking, like everything South Africa have, because of what they've done under their coaching ticket at the moment, and it's been so controversial, nothing has mattered for them after the Lions tour really, except the next World Cup, because they now have massive strength and depth. We're helping them by giving them access to our best players in every match they play at club level in terms of analysis and information. Like I still would make South Africa the out and out favourites alongside France. They're 1A and 1B.
I think France are ahead. I think France are ahead. Home soil is there's. It'll take a mammoth task to beat them in any game in France.
And one other thing, the best team in the world, malarkey in a team sport like this, where
it doesn't matter.
Teams don't play each other. Mm. Like we don't play each other in matches that really matter.
I think
the
up
best
to
team
now,
in the world are the world champions.
But up to
in
now,
rugby,
Jared,
and then afterwards,
Ireland have deserved the tag because of
our form is good.
What we've seen the last 15 or 16 months.
Our current form is good, but they don't give out a trophy for that. They give a trophy out at the end of the World Cup, and if
like
you're,
the Seven
if you're not
Up Cup,
it,
is this
the,
Shane?
Which?
The 7-Up Cup that we won a few weeks ago.
It's all about momentum, Quinny. It's momentum.
Yeah.
Got plenty of momentum now, as Jerry would know.
But, yeah, South Africa, France will be incredibly strong. England, I think England are going to, they could be a real danger. They're on the side that is easier. Australia, Wales could even, you know, get a surge. who knows? It's all about the timing. And if you get good prep over the summer and you get a little bit of luck with injury, if you get the timing right and the preparation right, I think it makes a big difference at the World Cup. So the hype train, I would still be nervous and sceptical, and possibly our reality is a flip of a coin if we get to a quarter final.
And that, look,
and then if we lose that,
I'd take a flip of the coin this time with this group being in form as opposed to what happened in 2019, which, like, it was such a shit show. Like, that every single aspect of that thing fell apart.
The whole year was, you talk about momentum, Shane, that whole year was one bad performance onto the next. Finishing up in Cardiff with Wales, trouncing us 22-7.
I don't even remember that.
To win a Grand Slam. And then the World Cup warm-ups. I was in Twickenham. England put 50 or 60 points on us.
Ross Byrne didn't recover until, 3 weeks ago. From an Ireland perspective.
Brilliant performance against Scotland in the first game. If you remember, that was a great performance in the wet and rain of that second half.
In Japan.
In Tokyo, yeah.
It turned out that Scotland team were so flaky. In retrospect, yes. they were terrible.
Yeah, Japan was the one that was nobody really expected. Given 20 minutes into the game, Ireland were very, very dominant and had a couple of tries scored. But it totally unravelled and it came back to...
And it affected everybody. Like even Sexton in the game against the All Blacks was missing kicks to touch from penalties. And you're like, oh, this is a disaster. And sure, that game was over at halftime. But I guess that's the point, is that we should... I think Shifty Lad was in touch saying we should celebrate this Grand Slam...
Bask in it.
...as a thing in itself.
Yes.
Yeah, well, given it's only our fourth ever, of course.
And let's wait and see how we get on with the World Cup.
Third of our lifetimes. None of you are around in 1948, lads, no.
OTBAM live with Gillette Labs. Get the ultimate shave or your money back. Neon Night Edition available now. That is this week's episode of the Performance Rankings.
OTBAM's Performance Rankings with Gillette.
OTBAM with Gillette Labs. Get the ultimate shave or your money back. Neon Night Edition available now.
Cupra, Formentor. Two words causing quite a stir. Because this car stops you in your tracks, even when it's standing still. But that's what it was designed to do. Make a stunning first impression. Turn heads in your own 231 Cupra Formentor. It's ready and just waiting to be driven away today. Take the first step towards your new Formentor. Search Cupra Official.